Welcome to Super Tatis for Parshas Re'eh. Today's shir is dedicated for the Refuah Shleima of Moshe ben Rachel Mina, Eliana Malka bas Basi Rachel, and Yosef David ben Rachel Bela. This shir was also sponsored Le'ilui Nishmas Sima bas Harav ben Sion. So I have four stories this week. The first of the four stories is apparently in Yerushalayim on Rehov Elkana. Two Gedolim were basically living in the same building, kind of as neighbors, and one is Rav Avadya Yosef and the other one is Rav Abba Shaul. So apparently there was a extended time where there was a period of attack from the Jordanians where everybody had to go down to the Miklat, the bomb shelter, and included in them was Chacham Avadya and Abba Shaul. So the two of them, you know, everybody was sitting there, and the two of them would sit in a corner, and they would sit and learn with Hislavus and Yerushamayim, and that was, a beautiful story sitting in and of itself. But the way that the story goes is that things started getting more and more intense with respect to the matter, and word came out that all of a sudden the Syrians had got involved, and they were targeting Yerushalayim, and things were getting very, very labidic, for lack of a better term. And all of a sudden, everybody's getting a little bit worried. They start asking, well, what are we supposed to do? They wanted to consult, they wanted to say Tehillim or consult with the two Chachamim, and see, maybe we need to move or, whatever it was. And they were asking them, they turned to them and they said, well, here's the news. What's going on? And the response was from Rav Avadya, I understand that you're concerned, but you don't need to bother us. We're currently involved in a war also. When we're sitting here and learning, just like that war doesn't need to be disturbed, we don't need to be disturbed either. Now, I'm sure he said it in the gentlest way, but the idea was that they viewed their learning as really the Milchemta Shel Torah, and the Milchemta Shel Torah was also fighting on a front. There's a story about the Be'er Mayim Chaim, or Chaim Michernovitz, who, when he was a young Avreich, was also operating as a Malamed, and it was a Thursday during Parshas Re'eh, and he wanted to explain and underscore and highlight the importance of Chesed and Tzedakah. So when he got to the pasuk of Nason Titenlo, is talking about giving money to an ani, he really emphasized Rashi's comments Afilu Me'apamim. It needs to be 100, even 100 times. Meaning, the same guy comes up to you, you don't say, okay, you're a bum, you're a deadbeat, you've already come 99 times. No, keep giving. So one of the Talmidim got a little bit cheeky and decided, okay, let's test Rebbe to see if he, really believes what he says. So what they did was they asked their father for a coin. I don't know what necessarily was called a Rhinish, which could be broken into 100 smaller coins. And then they broke that into 100 smaller coins. And he brought it, it was called a tzeil, and he brought it to his Malamed, which is the Be'er Mayim Chaim. And he said, my father wants to give you a gift. So he's now planted 100 pennies, as it were, 100 coins with his Rebbe. And then he went to go find an ani on the street, a poor person, and he said, listen, I want you to do me a favor. The Be'er Mayim Chaim over here, he has the opportunity to give to you. I want you to go to him until you see that his coffers run dry, and he gives you the last coin. So lo and behold, the ani agrees. He goes to the door 98 times, 99 times, the 100th time. Each time, the Be'er Mayim Chaim was indeed consistent with what he taught, and he gave it to him b'sefer panim yafos, each time one of those coins. And when the Talmud saw really the madriga that his Rebbe was on, he begged him for mechila. And now he learned kind of how that worked out, and that he passed the test. And that just shows, not saying that we should test people, but like we should appreciate, you know, the chesed and the value of being tochach baro and many other things in that story. There's a story, they asked the Belzer Rebbe, this is my third story, they asked him, how do we kind of grow in our love for Jews that are very, they're kind of tough to, I guess we're supposed to love them, but they're kind of tough to like. And he said, I'll give you a mashal. Said, you know how sometimes you go into a rough Rambam and you say, I'm going to really put in a lot of effort to try to be to explain and justify it and straighten up the Rambam? He said, that's the same thing with a Jew. When you run into a Yid that's not so perfect, you know, we'll try to be Malamed Zchus on them in the same sort of manner. Last one is a quote from Rav Edelstein, which I think is extremely provocative. And I'm not going to get too deep into the Rashi and Tosis on it, but I think that it's worth thinking. He was in a conversation with somebody, and they said, well, what's the opposite of kibud horim? And his response was to make demands of your parents. So, you know, we live in an age where the balance between parents and children, the balance of power, the balance of authority seems to have had a little bit of modifications, at least in the views of some. And it's important to kind of remember, like, it's natural for parents to want the best for their children and to often know what's best for their children. And that's the presumptive status that Rav Edelstein takes, and we should do our best not to forget that. Next, let's move to Divrei Torah. I had more stories this week, but I can't do too many. So the Sforno says at the beginning of the parsha, it says Re'ei Anochi Nosein L'Tnechem Hayom Bracha Klala. It's a bracha or a klala. And the Sforno uses this. I originally thought this was a polemic against the Rambam and Hilchos Deos, but maybe or the concept of Divrei Rishus as comes out in the Chavos Levavos. I'm going to explain it like this. He says, don't grab the middling way. Says that the way that you're going to live your life as a Jew is going to be a life of extremes. Either it's going to be much more bracha than you ever need or much more klala than you ever need. So what's he saying and what's he trying to explain? So I saw three mahalchim. The first one is that's the way that Eretz Yisrael is described. If you look right at the end of the prior parsha, you'll see that Eretz Yisrael is described as a place that when it has the bracha from Hashem, everything is super good. And when it doesn't have the bracha from the Hashem, it's really quite the opposite. So that's the first explanation. The second one I saw quoted from the Sfas Emes says, if a person takes upon himself Ol Malchus Shamayim, then it's going to be abundant bracha. But if they don't, then it will be indeed the opposite. And the third one I could say, based on a tzushkel from a Gra and Mishle that I am particularly fond of and just mentioned to my daughter a couple weeks ago, says, look, the greater of a status you have means the greater potential you have to for greatness or for evil. So, for example, plants or inanimate objects, they can only do so much. They don't really have so much bechira, as you know. So from inanimate objects to plants, there's a little bit of a distinction in between life. And then when you move from that to animals, animals have a little bit more range of motion, as it were. And then there's humans. And then really at the top of all that is an Adama Shalem. An Adama Shalem, when they reach their full potential, you know, the opportunities for Kiddush Hashem are nearly endless. And the opportunities for Chilul Hashem also are far greater than a regular person even. So I would use that to explain that the life of a Jew is a life in an amplifier. brachu klola. There's never going to be, you know, just a just so-so moment. The life of a Jew is either you're going to use your potential and it's going to be mila, or you're not going to use it and it's going to be mata. Next one that I want to share is Bonimatem Lashem Elokechem. It's a Chizkuni. It's also a Sforno. It says, and then it says, Losis Godudu Losusimu Korcha. So this is talking about, since we are children of Hashem, we should not engage in excessive practices of mourning that are physically hurtful to ourselves. So one of the Mahalachim is saying in Rishonim that your parents know best, so you should never be upset. That's not the one that I'm going to proffer here. The other one is that since you have, you know, even though you lost a close relative, right, that you have a chiyuv to be za'avel for, that you would normally, you know, you would feel the depths of your avelus for, which you, of course, should, to the extent of halacha, don't do it more than is necessary, and don't do it more than what halacha is, to the point where you're going to be hurting yourself, because you still have a relative. And that relative is none other than the Ribono Shel Olam. And this emphasizes the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not just a kind entity to us, but it is a relative. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a relative, and that that should be giving us a lot of extra important simcha. Next, the Samachta Bechagecha. The Chinuch says a very interesting point here. He says, look, simcha is a necessary component to a person's wellness, which I thought was really, really quite fascinating when you think about it. Just like, you know, we need to sleep and to eat and to drink and whatnot, sometimes we need to be happy. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Mezaka Klal Yisrael. Instead of just making this like, you know, some sort of parv act that, you know, we can do it or we cannot do it, even though it'll be physically beneficial, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it that this extraordinarily beneficial thing would actually become a mitzvah on Yontif. So we need to do that periodically, and it's a beautiful thought that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is contemplating helping us and loving us in such a intimate way. Next, we have the pasuk Lamanya Varechacha Hashem b'chol asher ta'aseh. So you should give bracha with all that you do, and this is speaks to the concept of hishtadlus. Hishtadlus is that we need to put in our own human initiative and shouldn't necessarily sit on our laurels and rely on a Kadosh Baruch Hu to take care of everything, notwithstanding the fact that a Kadosh Baruch Hu has done a gezeira, and he's really going to determine the results of many things in our lives. Notwithstanding all of that, we still have a chiyuv, an obligation for hishtadlus. So the Sefer Ikarim emphasizes this point. He says that really the idea is the bracha comes after the hishtadlus, and we need to do our part. And as the Mesilas Yesharim says, we need to pay our tax. Shlomo Melech, and this is referred to in the Sefer Ikarim as well, points us to the ant. He says an ant is self-motivated, an ant is planning ahead, and an ant is ready to put in the work with charitzus and ishtadlus to be able to get the bracha that he's supposed to get. It's the same sort of concept that the Chovas Levavos talks about. He says, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give you your parnasa. He'll put the food on your spoon or your fork or your utensil, as it were, but it's still your chiyuv to lift that to your mouth. And if you don't do that, you can't expect to be nourished without doing the job of lifting your food to your mouth, putting it in your mouth, closing your mouth, chewing and swallowing. So that's the important lekach, is that even in an instance where we are on an extraordinarily high level of being ba'alei bitachon, we still need to do our work, and we should rejoice in that. Last is our thinking question. So in the Parsha Shavua, we mention all of these holidays. We mention Pesach. We mention Shvi Shel Pesach. We mention Shavuos and Sukkos. But does anybody see Shmini Atzeres anywhere in that list? Because if you don't, you're in good company. So the question is, why is that omitted from the list of Moadim in this week's Parsha? Thanks for learning.